So as a chime resonates through your very being, calling in the four directions, it reminds us of our interconnection with all of creation and with the sacred circle of life. Allow it to call you into this sacred moment as we turn within and touch the very essence of our beings and rest in the peace that surpasses our human understanding. And so as we breathe into this sacred space, we let all distractions just fade away. We set aside the concerns of tomorrow, any concerns about yesterday, and we come to this now present moment. We allow spirit to fill our hearts with thanksgiving for that presence of God that lives within each and every one of us in each and every moment. And we trust that God knows our needs even before we ask. And so we open ourselves to receive God's love and guidance and blessings as we listen to today's daily word. And the word is unique. Being true to spirit within, we are magnificent, unfolding creations of God. Because of our diverse, unique features, talents, and backgrounds, we each fill a special place in life. At times, we may wonder how we fit into what seems like a jigsaw puzzle of humanity. Yet being true to spirit within each of us, we are magnificent, unfolding creations of God. We complete one another by being a unique part of the whole. No one person can take the place of another. Being unique in the way we think, look, and sound, we add substance to the entirety of God's family. When all the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle are in place, the true picture emerges. So it is with each one of us. As unique as we are, we join with one another as the family of God. And from Isaiah, because you are precious in my sight and honored, and I love you, I give people in return for you, nations in exchange for your life. Being true to spirit within, we are magnificent, unfolding creations of God.
Be with
And now that our minds and hearts are wide open, and we're open and receptive to that movement of spirit within us, we begin our lesson and meditation time with this sacred reading.
From Hinduism, Bhagavad Gita 13:11. This is true knowledge, to seek the self as the true end of wisdom always. To seek anything else is ignorance. From Buddhism, the Garland Sutra 10. Of all things seen in the world, only mind is the host. By grasping forms according to interpretation, it becomes deluded, not true to reality. All philosophies in the world are mental fabrications. There has never been a single doctrine by which one could enter the true essence of things. By the power of perceiver and perceived, all kinds of things are born. They soon pass away, not staying, dying out instant to instant. And from Christianity, James chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good life, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambitions in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This wisdom is not such as comes down from above, but wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits. And the harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace.
Tells me I'm accepted in your gaze. A word of kindness, and we don't need to be afraid. Love is here this morning. I can see it in your face. Love is in this brand new day, and I pray love will use me in the most beautiful of ways. Oh, love is the reason I am here. Oh, love is the reason I am. While this life is moving on, know there's something you want to discover before it's gone. Maybe it's to lie down in a field of emerald green with the fragrance of the flowers floating on a summer breeze. Or perhaps it's just to live this day, each moment as it comes, with the willing
Thank you.
It's our silent applause when we don't want to break that beautiful energy. Thank you, Kathy. Well, this is week two of our Faith in Action, and if you weren't here last week, there are flyers out on the front that invite you to make a commitment to yourself about your spiritual life, and so I suggest you pick one up out there. But last week, we're looking at, in this seven-week series, the Eckhart Tolle's book, A New Earth, and it's available in our bookstore and also everywhere else in the world since Oprah did a series on it, and it's a very intriguing and inspirational and informative book. And as we discussed last week, both the Hebrew and Christian scriptures speak of the collapse of the existing order and the rising of a new heaven and a new earth, which is where Eckhart got this the title, that whole idea that we're going to go through this transformation. And of course, a new heaven constitutes the emergence of an awakened consciousness. It's not, you know, something coming from without down to change things. It's this new consciousness waking within us that is going to be that second coming. And the outer will reflect the inner. And so that awakening will result in a manifestation of a new earth, of a new experience that we have in the outer as we transform our inner. The word of Paul we focused on last week calls us to be not conformed to the world, but transformed through the renewing of your mind, so that you may determine the will of God, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Be not conformed to this world. That's the challenge we all have as we're here as human, having a human adventure, being spiritual beings, but we forget who we are, and so we often end up conforming to this physical world. We also noted that this transformation that we're going through is not about adding information or changing our beliefs. That's all just about the content. It's rather about a shift in consciousness, a shift in the structure of who we are. Eckhart points out that an essential part of this awakening is the recognition of the unawakened you, the unawakened me, that part of us that is automatic, on automatic pilot, that just seems to go through the motions and does align with this world. The ego is what we call it. It's as it thinks and speaks and acts, And as we recognize that ego, as we recognize it within ourselves and also how it comes together collectively and conditions our whole mental outlook, that structure by which we live, that becomes the beginning of awakening. Remember that in unity we talk about the ego as that which edges God out. Because when the ego is in charge, oftentimes we don't take the time to focus on God. It's a great distraction. All of the great spiritual teachings share a twofold fundamental truth, and that is that the normal human state of mind contains a basic dysfunction. When we're in this human aspect of ourselves, that we are often in a dysfunctional state, and we call it in Christianity original sin. In Hinduism, they call it monkey mind or Maya. In Buddhism, it's called suffering or dukkha, or error thought is in New Thought, we refer to it. But we all recognize that somehow, when we're in this human adventure, that we get ourselves sort of twisted and our priorities backwards, and we forget who we truly are. And also, all of these faith traditions also speak of an awakening, a transformation that's going to come that is going to be in recognizing this basic dysfunction and then moving forward in a new way. And we call that in Christianity salvation, or enlightenment in Hinduism, or an end to the suffering in Buddhism, or awakening in New Thought. And so we see that this has been taught to us through all of the major traditions, and that's what we're being called to this morning. When we realize that we're going to look at, in order to do that awakening, we're going to look at the mechanics of the ego, which Eckhart Tolle spends about 3 chapters on, looking at how our ego functions and how it confuses us and makes us think that it is the real us rather than the spiritual being that is behind that ego. And so we're looking at, how do we wake up? How do we recognize that ego when it's functioning so that we can identify it? Because in that identification, in that awareness, comes the awakening. Tolle says, when you recognize the unconscious in you, that which makes the recognition possible is the awakening, is the transformation of our consciousness. So just that very act of seeing, oh, there it goes again. That very act is the awakening that we're seeking, but it's being in that place more and more of the time. Most of us get to that place now and then. Most of us take an exception every now and then. The spiritual journey is about expanding that time that we're in that awareness place and reducing the time that we're being run by our egos. That's the first and essential step. Albert Einstein said that ego is an optical illusion of consciousness upon which all further misinterpretations of reality are based. So when we live from our ego, when we live from that first mistaken identity, it colors everything else we see in the world, because we trust our 5 senses, we believe in the material world, we think that is what is reality and truth, and it's all based on that first misperception of believing that we are who our egos say we are. We mistake that which we can observe for reality. But in truth, the physical manifestation that we can see is only the tip of the iceberg of creation. In truth, beneath that appearance is the whole of consciousness, that oneness that where in truth we're all one, where we're all connected. And just the tips of the iceberg stick out, and we live like the tips of the iceberg are our reality. And that's what gets us into trouble. So when we realize, when we make real to ourselves that the truth is beneath the appearances, that the truth is in fact invisible, when we can let things just be rather than having to name and define and categorize and make sense to our 5 senses, when we can let go, which is what we do when? In the silence. It's when we stop using words, when we just begin to experience what is true, that's when we begin to experience the real truth of our being. That's where we begin to tap into that sense of awe and wonder about the totality of creation, rather than get caught up in the minutiae of our daily challenges and the appearances of challenges that are in our daily lives. It's especially so when we look at ourselves, at our egos. That's where the misconception, as Einstein said, begins, and it's what ends up affecting everything else. That word I, the I am, is both the most powerful concept and the most delusional, depending upon how we use it. It embodies our greatest error and our deepest truth. Unfortunately, most of us use it most of the time in error consciousness rather than in that aspect of truth. We see ourselves as finite and separate and distinct and nameable. When we talk about I or my or mine, we do it to separate ourselves from the rest of creation. As we grow up, as Eckhart says, we become associated with a particular body, a particular appearance, a particular race, a particular culture, a gender. Age, as time changes, we with the values of the families that we grow up in, and all of those things begin to form our identity. And in that identity, we see ourselves as separate and different and unique from everyone else. And it's a different kind of unique than we talk about in our daily word today, where we talk about that we're each a unique expression of a whole. We forget that we're part of the whole, and we focus on just being that unique expression. We establish and perpetuate that misperception through our egos, and it's completely conditioned by the past. Our ego can't exist in this now moment. Our ego exists by all the definitions, all of the experiences that we've had in the past, and the content can change. It's determined by the culture we're in or the family we're in, whether or not we live in the United States or we live in China or we live in India, or we bring content to this process. And the content can change, but the structure is what needs to shift. The structure that sees reality as separate. The structure of our minds that is error consciousness or original sin or monkey mind or all of those things, that structure that holds that we're actually separate beings is what gets us into trouble. And we go through life trying to replace the content because we don't feel fulfilled. And so we think if we can just change the content, we'll finally find fulfillment. But you can never get enough of what you don't really want or need. And so we continually buy more things, change our beliefs, and still come up short as long as we're looking outside of ourselves for that fulfillment. Eckhart suggests that one of the most basic mind structures through which the ego comes into existence is this sense of identification. And so when we think of identification, when we think of our identity and attempt to define ourselves through the things that are around us, we forget who we are. In fact, in attempting to define ourselves by the things, we get lost in the things. And paradoxically, what keeps our consumer society going is the fact that trying to find ourselves in things doesn't work, because that's what creates the demand for more things. Oh, well, I bought that and it didn't work, so I got to look for something else. And our economy has become built on this misconception, knowing that they can always find something else that we think will fulfill that basic searching within us. But nothing, we can't get enough of what we don't really want. So we continue to search and search and search and consume and consume and consume. And as long as it's in the exterior, it's not going to fill that. Our out-of-control ego identification, think of your own. Think of your image, your car, how you decorate your house, the kind of clothes you wear, the food choices you make, the hairstyles you have, the economic level that we live in. It leaves us with the only measure of progress being more. We come up with that myth that more is better. And the more I have, we have the stories, the one with the most toys wins. And what we know when we live that out, and I think we're discovering that in this nation where we've gotten to have just about everything we could even imagine we might want, and we've come up wanting. We're starting to make that transformation to realize that it's more than things that we need. Things are not to blame. They're not evil. It's not that somehow spirit is good and material is evil. It's just in the misprioritizing of that. All the things are wonderful creations of God. They're all part of this wonderful experience that we get to have, this human adventure. But the error is in placing reality in these things that have only come to pass. In truth, reality is that which is eternal, that which is indestructible, that which comes to be always. The presence that we experience, love that we experience, all those things that it doesn't matter how much time goes by, they endure forever. But all of the things that we put our identity in is where we get lost. So how do we wake up? How do we become aware of that dynamic so we can be more in the reality of who we are rather than in the illusion of the world of appearances? Well, Toll has a few suggestions, and the first one is body awareness. As much as our bodies can get in the way of us, if we get caught up in our image and we get caught up in our age and what we look like and how we appear to the world, that can get us lost. But in fact, our bodies also can create a wonderful bridge, because in our bodies, when we focus to our inner body, we can experience this now moment. We can experience that that essence that is our life. So I invite you just for a moment, just close your eyes and just experience the energy, the life energy that is in your hand. Don't think about your hand. Don't engage your mind. Just experience. Feel the warmth. Feel the movement. Feel that life energy that actually moves through your entire being. When we ground into that place, whether it's into that life energy or whether it's even into a pain or discomfort or a dis-ease that our body is having, we get ourselves grounded in this now moment. We don't need to name it. We don't need to think about it. We just experience it. A lot of work when you work with pain is about acknowledging it, because what we resist persists. And in our world, we spend so much time trying to medicate and ignore and distract ourselves from what is actually going on in this now moment that it continues to persist. We just cover it up, and yet it stays there underneath. The ego cannot exist in this now moment. So when we're willing to be present to the now moment and experience, we make that bridge to knowing the true essence of who we are. So that's the first one, body awareness. The second one is self-observation. Investigate your relationship with the things of the outer world by observing yourself, in particular with things that you designate as my house, my car, my favorite necklace, my favorite show on TV. Think about all of those things and just begin to observe. It requires being present in the now, and again, it isn't about asking the mind or engaging in thinking about or analyzing or assessing, but simply observing yourself. How much of our self-worth is bound up with the things we possess? If you imagine suddenly losing something, what kind of feelings come up? If you lost a favorite keepsake, what were the emotions that happened? When we have a sense of attachment, when our ego, and ego is always about where the attachment is, it can affect the very essence we think of who we are. We think that it's changed who we are. I know when I moved from owning a home to renting, the whole idea of preparing myself for that was a huge shift in my identity. I had to begin to let go of this part of myself that I identified myself as a homeowner. It had been a goal, it's been something I've always done, and I had to work with that to say, that's really not who I am. Owning a home has nothing to do with who I really am at my core. It has nothing to do with my security. It has nothing to do with my ability to express God in the world or to find joy or to find comfort or security or even to have a home. Has nothing to do, in fact, I believe the Native Americans had it right, that in truth, none of us can own the land. That's all an illusion. So think about, as you go through your days and you find yourself attached to something, just what that means, and just begin to observe it, because the very observation of it will begin to help it dissolve. The third thing we can do is to yield, to surrender to that which comes about. Oftentimes, one of the ways we discover that we're not those things that we have is that we lose them suddenly, tragically. We have a fire and everything we thought defined us is burned down. We lose a loved one. I can attest to this process that when you lose something that you think has defined you, if you'll just be in that present moment rather than we have a choice, in everything we have a choice, we can go to the attachment and then that begins to define the loss of it will define our experience of who we are, or if we can just be in that space, what I discovered is that that presence, that secret presence manifests. And I discovered that I'm not who I defined myself. I shared my life with a loved one, but that wasn't what defined me, that God is still here present in my life. I've heard many people when their houses burn down, they go through a bit of mourning and then they feel so free. It's like they get to start over. So another way to look at that is that we begin to yield to whatever happens in life, to not be attached to how things turn out, to surrender to what goes on without, so that we're not attached and defining ourselves. And that's what allows us to know that God is good in each and every moment, that God is good all the time. And in knowing God is good all the time, it means that how we've defined ourselves and what things are good and bad actually are only our definitions, because whatever turns out is how it ought to be. Toll points out something that I often say. When I surrendered my life to God, what I knew was in each and every moment, whatever was showing up was for my highest good. If we've surrendered our life to God, then whatever is showing up in your life, however your ego wants to judge it, is for your highest good, because as we go on this journey, God will always create for us, God meaning the whole principle of creation, it's the nature of how we function, whatever shows up will be inviting us into stepping higher, into learning a lesson, into detaching from what is there and getting in our way of ultimate growth. The final tool to use in doing this, in becoming aware, in doing this awakening, in shifting out of our ego and becoming aware of it, is gratitude. Gratitude is an awesome tool to use. We don't have to have a tragic loss. That's the good news. You don't have to go through some tragic loss in order to discover that who you are and what you have and is all that you need, that the presence of God is still right here in you, that the eternal nature of who you are continues to exist. And when we move into gratitude, think about that, that how much of our lives we spend in wanting and desiring and longing for and all of those aspects, and that's all about our ego wanting to be attached to things. And then stop in that instance and shift to gratitude, being grateful right here in this moment. You can't be grateful in the past. You're grateful in this now moment. And so a way to shift out of past and ego and attachment is to become grateful right here and now. I'm grateful for this life. Think of five things in any given moment. If you're feeling yourself run by your ego or depressed, just stop and think of five things that you're grateful for in this now moment, and we'll just snap you right back into this awareness. The now moment is the only absolute truth that there is. Everything else is a drama and a story. And there's nothing wrong with our dramas and stories as long as we recognize them as such. We can enjoy our dramas as long as we recognize that we're playing a role in a drama and it's not the truth of who we are. It's the human adventure we're engaged in, but the truth of who we are is that eternal, spiritual essence of God that is in fact connected to all of creation. We don't have to be there all the time. It's not an all or nothing affair. But the more we are, the more we practice, the more we prepare and go within, the more we do gratitude, the more we do body awareness, the more we meditate and experience that inner light, the more we create that as a major part of our lives, the more that will become our outlook with whatever goes on. It'll become the automatic response when something that appears to be a tragedy happens. We will know that we can go to this place, we'll trust it, and we'll know the essence of who we are. And again, quoting Paul from his letter to the Philippians, when we come from this place, we understand this word. So think about sitting in this place of oneness, this place of inner essence, as you listen to these words. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds. Or in the words from The Course in Miracles, I can choose peace instead of this. Namaste.